On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Like one third more sports than a normal can.
Welcome to Tall Can Sports. It's Matt and Nate back with you. We've got Nate back here because we've got some stuff coming up that we don't really know anything about, and we need him to guide us through. How are you, man?
Good. I'm still trying to hear back from Obscure Sports Quarterly about a senior writer position there. Then I found out it's just a joke in the movie Dodgeball.
It's a great movie.
So I had a funny thing happen at yoga the other day.
Hit me.
Okay, so like the studio I go to, I got a shameless plug, Adi Shesha Yoga Zone.
Yeah,
they have one studio in the Glebe, and then they've got another on Wellington West. Yeah, I know, hipsterdom personified there, right? So I'm like, I got to go to class on Tuesday afternoon here. But I get on the bus just like by rote, end up at the other, not at the studio I was intending to go to, but the other one. So instead of having a nice, you know, hatha class, you know, work out some, you know, stiffness and whatever after lifting weights, I end up in the warm flow class with like the heat panels all turned on, and it's like 33 Celsius in the studio.
Oh, yeah, hot yoga.
My first ever hot yoga class. I survived, I guess. I only had to go into child's pose once, which is, I guess, the equivalent of being sacked. Anyway, so that's my week.
Man, I've got a buddy of mine who also, he'd be about 6'5", had no idea he was going to a hot yoga class, just a yoga class, what he thought. And the guy sweats like just a machine.
Well, I do too.
And so he's walking out of this hot yoga class at the end, just soggy. And this woman, who's probably 5'1", is kind of talking to her friend and not really paying attention, and just walks right into the back of him, and her whole face hits the small of his back, and it's, everybody can hear this kind of just squish sound. And she's, right, like leaning back, sweat off her face and eyes from some other guy. It's, small of his back.
Well, not to overshare, but like the yoga towels that they sell, I put one down on my mat to catch all the perspiration. Because otherwise I'm just like, you know, I go to put my feet down and I'm like sliding backwards in a pool of my own perspiration. That's not fun.
What'd you say this was called? Warm, smooth?
It was something? Like flow, but it was warm. It was like warm. Flow warm. It's hot. I don't want to know what hot is.
But it sounds like 80s smooth jazz radio or something.
Just a lot of movements and
you're listening to Warm Flow on the Tall Can Audio Network.
Here's a groovy set of songs about clouds.
since such a thing doesn't exist, let's get into some sports. We got a lot of different areas we could start with, but the most recent one, and really we're going to start there because it's at the top of my notes here. David Ortiz announces this week that this will be his final season in Major League Baseball, presumably hoping to get the Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera treatment and tour of the majors, getting gifts and applause all over the place.
And I say that's great because, you know, the media doesn't fawn enough over Red Sox and Yankees players.
True.
Not at all.
They don't get enough attention. We should really...
They didn't make it out like Derek Jeter was the best shortstop of all time when for many years he was the second best shortstop of all, on his own team.
Ugh. Yeah.
But interesting. I mean, David Ortiz is I think... respected and beloved.
So before we go anywhere else,
despite the fact he was a
DH, is in the Hall of Fame, yes or no?
I think you have to be really, really exceptional. It's like the place kicker in the Pro Football Hall of Fame argument, and there hasn't been anyone who really was a pure DH elected yet. But you could argue that, you know, if the DH rule had been around prior to 1973, there's probably guys who were elected who probably would have been DHing for a lot of their
it's
careers.
It's a little like...
You know, your Harmon Killebrews, your Ralph Kiners, maybe even that fat guy who used to play for the Yankees in the 30s, 20s and 30s.
Is it a little like it took a long time for Hall of Fame voters to come to terms with the closer, right? That he's going to come in, he's going to pitch one, maybe two innings a night, and... You know, it took a while before they were prepared to acknowledge that as a legitimate, you know, we've had, as you mentioned, designated hitters for 40 years now. A lot of people, and I might subscribe to that theory that they're just failed position players that, you know.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, David Ortiz, I mean, I'm sure he could have been a really bad defensive first baseman if the DH had never existed. Someone
was
for his bat, you know, someone would have put up with, you know, bad defense from him at first base.
Right.
If the DH had never become a thing, right?
And right.
Like, and the fact of the matter is, I don't know if Paul Molitor gets in the Hall of Fame if he hadn't had the DH for about half of his career.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, because he was, you know, an injury guy who had trouble staying healthy and staying in the lineup, probably because he was moved around defensively so much that
probably
didn't help.
That's true.
And pretty much everyone who's gotten in who was like a 500 home run guy in the last few years has, you know, benefited from the DH at some point. You know, Eddie Murray, even Hank Aaron, you know, had the benefit of the DH for the last two seasons of his career, if you want to go back that far. So, I mean, as far as, you know, but he would be the, you know, first pure DH to go in, and Edgar Martinez isn't in, which is, to me, a travesty.
So let's run it down here for a second. 2,300-ish hits, 503 home runs, 588 doubles. The doubles thing, a lot of people will tell you that is the actual mark of a good hitter, is how many doubles you hit. That's more than Tony Gwynn. That's more than Ted Williams. But... does it mean something that you're up there doing it because in this day and age you can walk back into the, you know, into the hallway and watch your pitcher watch your last at bat while everyone else is having to go out and play baseball while you're sitting on the bench, right? Like, and defend. To me, that means something. Now, it's not his fault that the rules are what they are, but it is his fault that he's a fucking buffoon with the glove.
takes all kinds.
Yeah, but that's absolutely true. I just wonder whether or not, you know, on strictly offense, it's going to be pretty hard to keep him out. Well, but when you have basically
zero value defensively,
right,
minus value defensively,
right, that's tough for me.
Well, the parallels I'll make, and I'm not justifying these elections themselves. As far as that advantage goes, I mean, Ron Santo was inducted through the Veterans Committee, and he played in the era when the Chicago Cubs played their entire home schedule in daylight. And
right.
Everyone knows hitters having to, you know, do better in day games than in night games for reasons that shouldn't really require explaining. And I argued that he was, you know, his numbers were inflated by that. I mean, not that anyone listened to what I said. I was saying it on my old blog with like 60 readers a day or whatever. But I guess you could also look at Jim Rice was also elected, I think, in his last year of eligibility around 2007 or 8 or so. And, I mean, he had the huge advantage from Fenway Park, being a righty in Fenway Park.
Yeah, yep.
Which, you know, Ortiz played in Fenway, but, I mean, Fenway's not as generous to lefties because the right field alley is really deep in Fenway Park. It's like 380.
Yeah, yep.
And the 420 to dead center, so you lose some of your power. Some of those things would be home runs in gimmicky ballparks like the new Yankee Stadium. become fly balls, right?
Right.
So I think he's a Hall of Famer.
He's
got the good postseason record too.
1900 starts as a DH and 190-ish as a first baseman. So just over one season in the field. The comparable maybe is Frank Thomas, but the difference is Frank Thomas played 900 games in the field as a first baseman and then I think 1,100 or something as a DH later in his career. The other thing to keep in mind with David Ortiz that people don't talk about a whole lot, he didn't start being David Ortiz until he was like 29, in that era where everyone started to be David Ortiz, right? Where everyone was hitting a lot of home runs. I'm not saying was on steroids. The New York Times is saying he was on steroids. Remember that came out in a few years back that he was on a list of like 100.
Yeah, his name was leaked. So, yep. And this was testing that was done anonymously and it was no consequence testing.
That's right.
So, I mean, I don't know if you can really hold it against
him.
Well,
they're letting all kinds of guys from the steroid era in, so I'm not saying you can hold it against him, but it does make you wonder.
Mike Schmidt has said there's already guys who did steroids.
Sure there is, of course. And there will be more. I just wonder, when you only play half the game, can you be held up with the best the game has ever seen? You can certainly be held with the best the hitters. Right.
But the standard isn't like Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle. The standard is like, you know, Billy Williams or other guys who had great career, the guys who were great players but don't necessarily have that all-time greatest to ever play the game cachet.
Right.
I mean, was he a better player than Jim Rice? I mean, whom I just mentioned. Of course he by far, yes.
Sure.
I'm not saying, people who should have been inducted make the argument for others, but I think David Ortiz certainly has the case. I mean, I think that, like I say, the postseason play maybe is that thing that puts him, if you're looking for things that put him in, he's crushed it. In the
2013 World Series, he batted .688. Now, that's a small sample size,
that's the other thing I think sometimes
all his playoff numbers are off the charts.
All the sabermetrics. It is Hall of Fame, it is supposed to be a museum. It's a record of the game. But
it is something I love about the Baseball Hall of Fame compared to the rest. It is a Hall of Fame. Hockey is a Hall of Very Good. Right, basketball.
Yeah. Dino Cicerelli.
Honestly, one of my favorite players of all time, Matt Sundin. That guy, good numbers, terrible teams, didn't win anything. I don't know. I'm glad he's in, but is he a Hall of Famer? That's a tough sell.
Matt Sundin's a Hall of Famer, I would say.
I guess, right? And I mean, that's a whole other thing. But
if they put Daniel Alfredson in there, they should burn the place with fire. I'm sorry.
Okay, but how is he different than Matt Sundin?
A lot less numbers.
Yeah, but better two-way player by far.
Was he? Was Matt Sundin that bad at defense?
Made a cup final. Sundin never did.
Won.
Yeah, but Sundin never did. So anyway, that's a whole other thing.
I digress.
I do, frequently. But to me, the Baseball Hall of Fame is the best Hall of Fame.
And no question.
I don't want to see them let that slide, right? I want it to remain very hard to get into.
By the way, there's a digression I got to throw in. We were talking about best Halls of Fame.
Yes.
You go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, and they've got like a bust of the head of like every player who's inducted, right? And then you go to the Baseball Hall of Fame, they've got those awesome plaques that kind of have like, the imprint of the guy, and then it says where he played. And the Hockey Hall of Fame has these cheap-ass plaques with the guy's like face like silkscreen.
Rarely even recognizable.
Meanwhile, what are the other two? Those other two sports have? They have induction weekend where people can come and watch the guys give their speeches. The Hockey Hall of Fame has like a snooty like dinner.
Yeah,
and it's like there's the difference between like hockey and real sports.
Yeah, easy. I think the comparable the difference there would be the draft weekends, which I think hockey does better than anybody else.
But they ripped off the NFL.
And now do it far better. In my opinion, true. Yeah. So
In your opinion, take 2 weeks to do seven rounds.
In your opinion, then, let's forget Ortiz for a second. DHs can get in.
Sure. I mean, kickers are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Is, you know, David Ortiz better than Edgar Martinez?
No.
Okay. So,
I mean, yeah, he hit more home runs, I guess. But to me, Edgar Martinez, I mean, his circumstance in being a DH was different. I mean, he had injuries that.
And he had to do it in Seattle where no one was watching.
Yeah. But, I mean, he had you know, injuries that kept him compromised him and forced him to be a DH. And it wasn't like he could only play first base. I mean,
right.
David, I mean, he came up as a third baseman, won a batting title.
Right.
As a third baseman. And maybe he had his best season perhaps as a third baseman before he had to play DH. Like, I mean, Ortiz really was first or DH. That was it. So,
well, and really just,
but yeah, it's kind of
interleague play in the World Series was the only time you were going to see that guy.
I still have a Toronto Star Sports section I've saved since 2004, where Richard Griffin writes that the Sox were going to lose the 04 World Series just because of the three games Ortiz would have to play in the field. Like, that was the basis for his whole World Series prediction. Was
like
one,
the Cards were just going to rip everything down the right
field. Yeah, they were going to rip everything down the right field line. They were going to bunt to him every time, and he was going to throw the ball, like, into the camera bay. And
yeah, how'd that go?
Yeah, how'd that go? Well, he didn't play first base for three games in St. Louis because they only needed two to finish them off.
You know what? I actually like Richard Griffin.
I do, too.
That's a terrible assessment right there. So, you know, when you write stuff, you're out there. And
this is when I was 27 right? And bitter. So.
Yeah, okay.
And it's different. How is that different from now? Well, I'm 38 and bitter.
You know what? Let's segue.
Big Poppy.
Into more baseball. It's a ways down my list here, but free agency and the crazy season in baseball is underway. Francisco Rodriguez is now a Detroit Tiger, I guess would be the first big domino, would you call it?
I would say so, yeah. Tigers go for, you know, guy who's, I think, 100 saves ahead of what Mariano Rivera had at the same age.
Is that true, eh? Wow. Yeah. Okay. That'll get
Cy Young awards were named. Jake Arrieta won the NL Cy Young.
Yeah, yeah.
And
deservedly so.
Yeah. Dallas Keuchel won the AL Cy Young.
We are both, you know, as we record this, this is a night ahead of the AL and NL MVPs getting awarded. You know, let's put ourselves out there, I guess. Do you think Josh Donaldson's taking down Mike Trout?
I feel like he might, just because, I mean, Trout had the same year he had the year before. And sometimes when you do that, you don't grab the attention of the voters.
Right.
You know, it was kind of the old rule, like way back when Mickey Mantle played, it was like, well, why aren't we giving it to him this year? And then it was like kind of the rule with Barry Bonds for a while in the 90s.
Yeah.
Why aren't we giving this award to Barry?
Right.
I mean, he won seven, but I mean, legitimately, he could have won 10.
Right, right. Yeah, you know what? There were some numbers, I think.
Trout had the best season. If you look at like wins above replacement,
yeah.
Trout had the best
yeah.
season in the AL.
Donaldson, if you subscribe to this theory, you know, he took his team to the playoffs. Does that automatically mean he was more valuable to? And that's always been the thing. Are we voting on the best player this year or the most valuable? And that bugs me every time in every sport at every competition I ever see it. As long as you're saying MVP and not MOP, this is a very different conversation, right?
I believe
valuable,
so, yeah.
Is different than most outstanding. And that's why I love.
Narrative still has a place.
Yeah. But that's why I love that the CFL calls it the MOP. We are giving this to the best player, not the most valuable player. And because to me, that's you can be on a terrible team and be the best player in the league, dragging them along behind you. You're clearly the most valuable player to that team, right? Your team's nothing without you. Most outstanding just means you could play for the worst or the best or whatever. You're just that good. And to me, I don't think you can make the argument Josh Donaldson is the most valuable to his team, but that doesn't seem to be what baseball is looking for. He might have been the best, but let's say you had to scratch him for 50 games because of an injury, and you've still got Batista and Encarnacion and Tulo and Martin and whatever. Are they still a playoff team? I don't know. Are they going off
a
cliff?
Are they a playoff team without him? No.
but they're not going off a cliff, right? The Angels without Trout, Oof, I don't know.
I think they would have finished the season in the Pacific Coast League.
The Penal League.
Hey, Cole Calhoun won a Gold Glove and Mike Trout didn't. Great system you got there, MLB.
That's a great name, too. Cole Calhoun.
Well, yeah, because people got butthurt over the fact that year after year, the three Gold Glove outfielders would always be three center fielders, right? You know.
As they should be. If you're the best, that's why you're playing out there. For me.
Yeah, but this year, but now they, because of some stink, they overreacted and switched it. Now it's designated by the three fields.
Blech.
And now Cole Calhoun gets a Gold Glove and Mike Trout doesn't win. Clearly the three outfielders, and what was it, Jonas Cespedes won the AL Gold Glove in left field when he was out of the, when he finished the league season in the NL. Like, come on. Sorry, I'm getting off topic. But there was nothing wrong with having it being three center fielders or being two center fielders and the right
fielder.
We got
three of these to give out to outfielders.
With the most base runner kills or whatever.
Sure.
You know,
so,
and the fact that if you could win a Gold Glove as a left fielder under the old system, like Barry Bonds did 8 times and Ricky Henderson did once, I mean, more power to you.
So to you, does it matter? Is Josh Donaldson still the winner, whether it's MVP versus MOP?
If it's MVP, I think it's got to be him. I mean, he came up big when the Jays made their run.
Real big hits.
Yeah.
A lot of bottom of the ninth.
It would be the closest thing the Jays have ever had to a deserving MVP because Lord knows George Bell didn't deserve it in 1987. Alan Trammell got hosed.
You got a lot of problems with old Blue Jays, don't you?
No, I love George.
Who's your other...
George was a third-line grinder from Saskatchewan in a Dominican ballplayer's body. Complete with Jerry Curl.
Love the Jerry Curl. Who's the other guy? Manny Lee.
Yeah, poor Manny.
Fuck him. So we're both out there. See, I wonder about the American bias, and I really hate playing that card. I really think that here in Canada we play it too much. I just wonder, right? One guy's in Los Angeles, one guy's in Toronto.
That's true, but yeah, and Americans, they're not the most worldly people. Like all those people, oh, they're the Syrian refugees. I'm going to Canada, so you think we'll let you in? No, go away.
We're taking in enough Syrian
refugees. We're already taking in enough American refugees. Yeah, you're going to be asking why there's no Hardee's.
You're also going to miss, but you'll love ketchup chips when you get here. Apparently they don't have those in the U.S.
No. Yeah, that's
welcome. Here's your ketchup chips and Molson Canadian.
Apparently the Blue Jays are a player for Aroldis Chapman, though, eh?
I'd heard that, too, and that is where I wanted to go next was off-season. Jordan Zimmerman's the other name I keep hearing. Chapman,
let's hope the Jays don't go back to this thing where they're in on every free agent and get none of them.
That would be very Toronto of
like when they like when their record ends up like me at a speed dating night.
You know what? The other thing I hope
is here all week. Try the Bison Burger.
Is when they get in on all the free agents and get them, like Bobby or BJ Ryan AJ Burnett
and same Lyle Overbay.
You know what? For a year, the Overbay thing looked okay. Yep. A lot of doubles. I can live with that.
Those three guys made the sales of sunscreen go through the roof. But yeah, that was bad. It was just be careful what you wish for because it just might get.
Hey, look, we got everybody we wanted. Oh, yeah. They're not good. to me, Zimmerman is an interesting, you know, you'd call this a down year. But before that, had two very good years for Washington. The year before that, kind of held down by a pitch count because he was coming off Tommy John. But that is he probably costs you 2/3 of what David Price is going to get. And I think we're all past the point where we think Price is coming back.
I don't think we ever thought Price was going to be more than a rental for the Blue Jays.
I think there was some optimism, you know, maybe we're doing good.
No, okay, no, there wasn't.
Oh, Nate's not optimistic. I'm stunned. Right?
Well played. Yeah. Well played.
You know what? I never thought it was a lock. I thought, you know, if we come up a little short, maybe he feels like he's got a shot to do something here. Obviously, everything you've heard for weeks now, even while it was still going on, was that he was going to be a Cub. So, you know, power to them. Zimmerman is a cheaper option. There's some other guys out there. Samardzija, I guess, would be someone you could go after. I don't think anyone thinks Zach Greinke's coming here. I think Chapman probably doesn't happen just because everything that I've read and that I kind of understand is Osuna's going to stay in the pen as your closer for another year because he's still only 21, right? Like, and Sanchez comes out and goes into the rotation.
Yeah, I would expect Aaron Sanchez as a starter for the Blue Jays right. next year.
So you give Osuna another year because he's still got that young frame where he doesn't
have... could he not go back to being the eighth inning guy?
Sure. Sure he could. But I just... To me, I tend to think they're going to look for a starter here before they... Man, it's so risky to be spending money on bullpen guys. You just never know, right? You just never know what that's going to look like. I don't think... You know, you don't have any illusions that Zach Greinke's going to choose Toronto, I assume.
I subscribe to the theory that he wants to stay in the NL because he likes to hit.
Ugh.
I know, I hate
that. No one else likes him to hit.
Oh, apparently. He hit two home runs last year.
Hey, that's two more than I hit, so what am I supposed to say?
Yeah, that's like two more than... My God, just get the DH in both leagues already.
Honestly. But David Price is going to go hit. Apparently he'll be a Cub and... You know, he'll do his thing.
No, he'll like that. He won't be the ace there either because of Jake Arrieta.
It's true, eh?
I'm working on the bitter ass theory that David Price is just too nice a guy to ever be a playoff ace. He went to friggin' Vanderbilt. He's got no edge. He's not street.
I don't think anyone who's about to make $30 million a year street.
No, that's true.
Let's talk about something I know you have something to say about, as do I. A change in format to the NHL All-Star Game, which, to be fair, has been a joke for several years.
Several decades.
Back when it was...
I love that. I think I saw some like pile of clothing there on TSN. It was like, the traditional East-West format. I mean, you mean the traditional East-West format, the traditional North America versus the world format.
Traditional
the
fantasy
traditional
draft.
Campbell... Yeah, I know. It's just
they
like,
did the fantasy draft the last couple of years, which was, I don't know.
They can't make the players care about it. And you know what? I don't blame the players because they play 82 games. By that point in the season, their freaking IT bands are shot and they're all walking around in a duck waddle. I mean, of course they're not going to try in the All-Star game no matter what you do.
And so they've added $1 million.
Ooh, $1 million.
Bonus.
That's enough to tip the Sky Caps.
Okay, but... Amongst smaller teams, here's what they're doing anyway, for anyone who hasn't heard yet. Each division, so there are four divisions.
Are there four? I thought there were six.
There used to be.
Yeah.
It's hot. What year is this?
Yeah, now next year there'll be three.
So the two Eastern divisions, is my understanding, will play off, the Metro and the Atlantic. And then the two Western divisions will play off in a 3-on-3 20-minute game. So, and then the two winners, so the East versus the West, will play off, and the winning team would get $1 million. Now, instead of that being split between 20 guys on a typical All-Star game, it would be split between 10, right? Because 3-on-3 teams can be smaller. I think you're looking at about $90,000 per guy. Yeah. So,
now, first off, in the event of a tie, how do they decide it? Do they like line up on the blue line and shoot dirty limericks
they go to three
at
on
each other?
Three, oh, wait. Yeah, dirty. There once was a guy from Hartford.
Yeah.
You take it.
The stories are about him are greatly exaggerated.
So it's an interesting format.
I'll say this
seen,
when I was
go ahead.
Editing at the Ottawa Sun a few years ago, our hockey writer at the time, Chris Stevenson, CJ, he suggested doing something like this, but a 4-on-4 tournament. So it's not
right.
I mean, he had the idea like 8 years ago and now the NHL presents it as original.
Well, what do you think of it in terms of overtime?
Do what you want. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, what I think stinks about this is the whole $1 million thing. Because how was the NHL All-Star Game originally? Why did it come into being?
It was a fundraiser.
It was a fundraiser,
Ace
yes,
Bailey,
for Ace Bailey after Eddie Shore like.
Cracked his skull. Yeah.
And instead, the NHL and the NHL come with, oh, you have guys who are already millionaires, you know, have them split $1 million. It's just like pull your head on your asses. I know you need to shove it up there during the Heritage Classic games because it's so freaking cold. But, I mean, talk about myopia and obtuseness, you know, times 10 to the 12th power.
Get your thesauruses out, people.
No, I'm just serious. I mean, why would not, like, make that a charity thing or something?
Don't you think some of the players will?
Maybe, but I mean, the NHLPA doesn't, I mean, or make it a thing where to help out like you know, ex-players who've fallen on hard times, because I know the NHLPA's
hard times.
People have criticized them for not doing enough for guys who are out of the game and struggling. Yep. So, I mean, they could have talk about missing an opportunity to miss an opportunity.
I have a feeling. No, you're right. It hasn't been mandated in, but I have a feeling you're going to see that's what a lot of the players do anyway. Just because
I would hope so. I mean, I'm sure they're all listening to this podcast saying, "Oh yeah,
that's true.
That guy has a good idea." Yeah, right. But as far as the format, yeah, sure. That sounds like a good.
So here's the thing for me: the last I don't know however many years,
but I just don't think you can make the NHL players care about an exhibition game in January.
So do you think? Let's say, forget about Patrick Kane, forget about Alex Ovechkin making $10 million. If you're making $3 million a year and make the All-Star team, and there are those guys that, like, Alexander Kuznetsov probably makes the All-Star game this year, and he's making, like, 1.2. American taxes take that down to about, you know, $600,000 a year.
And there's what your agent steals.
Sure. All of a sudden, $90,000, it's more than it seems like it is, right, per player. I'm not saying they're going to be out there blocking shots and big hits and there'll be fights. I don't think it's nothing, right? Like, I think it was, and here's, on the format, I haven't enjoyed the last, you know, I probably haven't watched one since 09, and I might check this out.
Yeah, I mean, you might get some looky-loos for
this won't
a
make,
year or two.
I don't know that this will make me more likely to watch it. It won't make me less likely to watch it, right? And I wasn't watching anyway. So try something. I think it's gimmicky, but the whole fucking thing's gimmicky. It's just a thing for your advertisers. The game itself has always been more
for
kids.
The All-Star game serves about four purposes. It's for autograph hounds, jock sniffers, sports writers and jersey chasers, and their motives are about all equally pure.
it, you know, I think it's in Nashville this year.
Ooh, Nashville!
Hey, that'd be fun, man. I'd go to Nashville for a weekend. That was Knoxville.
You guys gonna buy a wigger, aren't you? On the plus side, I knocked over the Sun Sphere.
Come on, you picked the wrong Tennessee city.
Yeah, they're all the same.
That's true, man. But not all of them have the All-Star game.
Yeah, you're going to have another All-Star game, right, between now and next Friday?
To me, I think this is that would be a city I'd be interested in going to for the NHL All-Star game. I don't want to go to Toronto for the NHL. It'll
just be all hockey. We got to sneak in some love for Mike Fisher and Carrie Underwood, supporting visually impaired hockey.
Are they?
Yeah, I tweeted that at you.
I had no idea, man. I knew the Peets were.
Yeah, the Peterborough Peets did a thing, and Mike Fisher's a Peterborough Peets alumnus, and he and Carrie Underwood donated some prizes for
a
charity blind hockey game that they had in Peterborough.
I have to let our friend
I tweeted the fact that I was like, that's very cool they did that, even though you're an Oshawa Generals fan.
That's true, I am.
And that's their arch rival.
Of course it is. And the Gens got off to a good start, and then, well, we might get into that here shortly.
It's the year after Memorial Cup. Don't expect anything.
It's tough. I expected Michael Del Cole to play like a... Anyway, whole other thing. So, anyway, to me, just the contrast. I wouldn't see an NHL All-Star game in Toronto. I wouldn't go see it in Miami or Los Angeles. I might go to Nashville. That's just an interesting... I'm not going to Nashville, but in another time, in another place, right? You know, go check out Music City, USA, and then, you know, see a hockey game on the side. That'd be fun.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of the format, they're going to play 20, 40, 60 minutes of hockey still. The two teams, you've already seen Erik Karlsson complain about this. He doesn't like 3-on-3. You've already seen Dustin Byfuglien. The stars, the ones that, especially the defensemen, because you only have maybe two that you're comfortable with in this scenario, they don't want to do it. So
their egos can't take it.
Well, there is that element to it. But I wonder.
Butthurt Karlsson is butthurt.
I wonder.
I mean, he has enough trouble at 5-on-5. I mean, Dylan Larkin went by him like he was yield sign.
You wonder, twice. Right? Like they thought the money, and they didn't get enough, would be enough to keep some of these guys in. The fact that it just went 3-on-3 to me, I'd have kept the $1 million in. and stayed at 5-on-5. Because those guys, there's going to be guys that know I'm going to get exposed and I'm going to play a lot.
But it's an exhibition game. Why would you care about that?
I don't think they're going to care
It's not like there's a carryover to 5-on-5 with your regular team.
Okay, but, you know, I can kind of, as a defenseman, I don't really have to do anything in an all-star game at 5-on-5. I get gone around and someone scores and we go back to center. When it's 3-on-3, I got to skate, right? I got to go. Everyone's looking. So I wonder if they're going to see, especially defensemen, say...
Maybe they can let all the defensemen play forward.
Sure. I saw a video today of, what the hell's his name? Carey Lettinen shooting on Tyler Seguin. Seguin playing net and Lettinen out to front at practice in Dallas. So we'll see. But to me, it's just another desperate grab. At least they haven't awarded home ice in the Stanley Cup.
Oh, my God. That's the worst thing ever.
And it's funny because baseball to me has the best all-star game, the worst results always. So
just give it to the team with the most wins.
Honest to God, it's terrible. I wanted to talk, before we do a little CFL talk, about one of your favorite topics. Everyone's beloved Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, God. Are they still around?
They're still a thing, man. They are.
They're too big to fail.
As we, they need a bailout, though.
Can I interject quickly?
Absolutely, you can.
The crazy alcohol policy at ACC. Mm-hmm. I think this is the NBA's thing. So I went to a Raptors game a couple Sundays ago.
They beat. Boo!
Hey, I love the Raptors. They're my third favorite team. Your 87th favorite team.
I think
team.
I said 77th. Let's not exaggerate.
Right between like Parta Thistle and Borussia Dortmund.
I had Kuwaiti FC.
Hey, I actually named the teams that were real.
You don't think Kuwait has a...
They have a pro soccer team. I'm sure they don't have one that has the whole name of the country. Anyway, so at start of the third quarter, we go to buy like giant beers.
Challenge you to a duel,
which costs like 16. And they're like, oh, once the third quarter starts, we can't sell you a large beer, but we'll sell you two medium ones, which are actually more like fluid ounces of alcohol. And then with less than 3 minutes left, my friend texts me. He's like, because he'd gone out to use the washroom. And he's like, yeah, you can't come back in the last 3 minutes with a beer. So I have to stand here in the hallway in the concourse of the 300 level at ACC and drink this beer. These are rules that they put in, but I thought it was hilarious that we ended up getting more beer.
Yeah.
It means for slightly more because they couldn't just sell us a large one once the third quarter started. Thank you, David Stern. So anyways, your Leafs.
But several years ago, still on the topic of the Leafs, my old man used to buy about 10 games from a friend of his who had season tickets. And I would frequently mooch those tickets. And go see the Leafs. He had great seats, like 10 rows up on the second deck, like center ice. Awesome. And so I would take a buddy of mine, and we'd always go, because neither of us paid for the tickets, he would always offer to buy the first round of beers. And a large Canadian was $12. And so we'd get there, and he would throw down $25. The chick would get a dollar tip. We'd take our two larges and go. So we go to the first game of the season. And they, little do we know, over the offseason, have raised their beer prices. $12 a large Canadian was not enough. And so he throws down $25, and she looks at him. She's like, a little more. And now he's looking at me like, what the fuck?
Oh, it's insane. It's insane.
It was unbelievable, man. They raised them to, I think it was $13.50.
I think it cost us $33.50 for two large beers at a Raptor
game.
And that included
$25 bucks for two beers.
That included a surcharge. For using a credit card to pay. And it's just like, really? You have to tack it on the surcharge?
Unbelievable, man.
Nobody carries cash anymore.
You just bend over at the counter while some guy named Ludwig comes
up.
You're
just like trying to procrastinate on having to talk about your Leafs. You won three in a row. The parade is planned.
Here's what I want to... Yeah,
you want to talk about Reimer.
I hate the parade joke. Yeah.
Yeah, we really need to come up with some new Leafs jokes.
Honestly. Because honestly, there's plenty out there.
New Korean coach, win one soon, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what the dog does when they win. I've only had him 5 years.
I'm going to have the Leafs be my pallbearer so that...
They can let me down one more time.
Guffaw, guffaw, guffaw. James Reimer is 6-2-3. Jonathan Bernier is 0-7-1. And I don't understand why they keep trying to shove the job to Jonathan... Look, James Reimer... is not a playoff caliber Cup contender number one goalie. But he is clearly better than the other guy.
Yeah, I don't get this either. Like, Reimer is like, if you look at like the adjusted save percentage, because you know, to factor the power plays, because there's ones where the goalie just doesn't have a chance.
Yep.
He's like at third in the league.
Right.
He makes it tonight at like, I think, 950 in that adjusted save percentage behind Henrik Lundqvist and
And even unadjusted, he's at like 928.
Yeah, so even if he regresses, he's still going to be pretty good.
Right. So, where Bernier's at like, where's my shoes save percentage, I think, is where, like.
And then there's Lou Lamoriello's quote. Well, hopefully we have two goalies. Hopefully Jonathan steps up. I don't get it.
They so badly want it to be Bernier.
It's like some MLSE guy going, oh, like, he gave this guy an $8.3 million deal over 2 years. He better be the guy. Like some.
Yeah, condo, that's what it looks like.
Some condo builder who doesn't know hockey.
But this is very reminiscent, and I know you don't. God bless you. You don't follow the Leafs like I do.
I quit on them in the middle of a playoff series that they won.
In 1977.
I wasn't, no. They didn't win a playoff series in 77.
They sure didn't. It's very much like Vesa Toskala, who was backing up Evgeny Dabokov in San Jose, and everyone went, this is the best backup in the league. He just needs a chance. Well, the Leafs gave up a shit ton to get him, and then he went and took a shit in their crease.
How many best backups in anything have ever turned out to be the real deal? Steve Young and?
Jonas Gustafsson.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's a fair point. Let's see what Cam Talbot becomes in Edmonton. It just seems like
Reimer's clearly the guy right now, and you play him until he cools off.
And I have no illusions. You don't win a Stanley Cup with James Reimer in goal. But I don't even understand what we're arguing about here when one guy has won one game in 22 starts going back to last year. Now, granted, the whole team shit the bed last year.
You play with the best guy you have at the time.
You do.
I mean, obviously, you can't play him until he drops. I mean,
I would.
But I mean, right now, I think at least have a 3-4 this weekend, right? Carolina and then home and home with.
Well, they got Boston coming.
It was home and home with Boston, right?
Right, I think that's
like
right.
Like a Saturday, Monday home and home.
And so the Leafs are looking at those two teams going, yeah. And those two teams are looking at the Leafs going, yeah. But somebody's got to lose, right? And you're going to
Carolina would have trouble winning in the AHL.
Honest to God.
They should give Bernier that game kind of as a slump buster.
Well, they gave him the Ranger game, which was going to be tough. And did you see the highlights on what he did there? Yeah. Gave up one from center, and then the worst. Everyone talks about the shitty goal he gave up from center because that stands out.
Yeah, right? That's the one that you rubberneck at.
Oh my God, with like 45 seconds left in the third period, he kicks a rebound out that. It was awful. And look, I'm sure he's certainly not as bad as he was in that game, but he's not a number one goalie. And you can make the argument that James Reimer's not a number one goalie, but right now, he's better. So. Yeah,
he's a low-end number one goalie.
Right, at best.
Like, but if there's 30 number one goalies in the league,
The Leafs have made the playoffs one time since 2004, and James Reimer was your goalie. So he's not that bad.
You know, lockout shortened season.
Yeah, absolutely. But he was your goalie.
You know, lockout shortened season.
Go home, Nate.
No. Yeah, that's a long walk from here across the hall.
Honestly, it's just, I don't understand why the debate. I don't understand why they're still trying so hard. Well, because they've given him, as you've said, like $9 million over 2 years to burn.
You almost have to wonder if just like, you know, Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas and Mark Hunter and Jim Pagliafito and the other 18 assistant general managers.
Shut up in your face.
If they just don't, why aren't you playing Bernier? When are you going to play Bernier? When will Bernier win? And so on and so forth.
The pretzel money.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? When you bring in a coach like Babcock,
getting the results.
And that's it.
And that, to me, that's where.
To me, I wonder if that's the other thing. Maybe they don't want to win. Right? If you're trying to rebuild.
Austin 416?
Yeah. Says the Leafs just drafted my ass. Yeah. It's. I just wonder, man. I don't understand what we're even talking about. The Leafs are 3 points out of a playoff spot. They're not a playoff team. But right now, they're playing well, and no coach worth his shit changes anything. you just ride it while it's working, right? They've lost one game in their last six or whatever it is, and it was when Bernier started. So let's just fucking settle down. Move on to the CFL, because that's probably about all the Leaf talk you can handle.
Yeah, I'm already starting to break out in hives.
A couple of divisional finals this weekend. Take over, man. Break it down. Where are we going first, the East or the West?
Well, we'll start in the West because we want to end Eastern bias within our lifetimes. Certainly even though that's the later game on Sunday.
Is it?
Well, yeah, of course it is.
Oh, the West is.
Yeah, the West.
Yes, yes, yes.
Calgary at Edmonton. Yep. This is like the first time in a, since, I don't know.
Oh, in a dog's age.
First time in a dog's age, yeah, that the Eskimos have hosted like a Western final because they've been like.
Really, we're going to, the Eskimo, how about Ottawa? Long time since they've hosted.
Yeah, even longer time.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Take it.
Well, it's what's interesting is the team with the bye usually doesn't win the Western final just because that division, there's more parity.
Right.
So I went and looked it up. Since 89, when the team that's had the bye before the Western final is 10-15.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, under 500s.
Yeah, 40%. The only one, I had to factor in 1 year in the 90s when they didn't actually have a bye because of that was when they had the stupid U.S. division or whatever it was.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting. Now, Calgary's banged up on the offensive line. They lost Pierre Laviolette, who's probably the best center in the CFL.
Yeah.
And they lost Shane Bergman, their left guard, from Teterville, Ontario.
Bergman. Elliot Berg.
From Teterville, Ontario, between Waterford and Brantford, if you need a geographic reference.
You say Teterboro?
Teterville.
Oh, okay. Not like the airport in New York.
I happen to know that because I was working down that way when Shane was a high school kid. He was 6'6", 320 in grade 9.
At some point in our lives have worked at Teterville.
No, in Simcoe.
Of course, yeah.
So, interesting. Calgary's got like defensive linemen playing offensive line, and they're going into this game against the Eskimos, who have a pretty fierce defense.
Right.
And, decent quarterback with Mike Riley and Kenny Stafford and Darius Bowman are deep threats. So it's all kind of lining up for Edmonton, but who knows? I mean, it's the CFL. Weird stuff happens.
Yep.
And Calgary is still the team that went to, won the Grey Cup last year, was home for the West Final in 2013. They were in the Grey Cup in 2012 and so on and so forth.
Is Huff still running the show out there?
This is John Huffnagel's last year, too. Okay, right? Okay. Like next year, he's just going to be general manager, and he's handing the coaching off to Dave Dickinson, which was kind of cool because early in the year they kept going for like random two-point conversions. And they were like, it's Huff's last year. What's he going to do, fire himself?
I'm going for it.
He's like, going for two. I give no fucks.
Throw it up.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be an interesting matchup, but I definitely sort of lines up with Edmonton. I feel like it's going to be a tight one. Like Edmonton wins by like 7 or something.
What was the season breakdown?
I think Edmonton won 2 of 3.
Okay.
I mean, they dominated the kind of the second and third games. I mean, they won on Labor Day.
Yep.
Which in the Labor Day game's always at McMahon Stadium.
Yep.
And then I think they won their rematch, if I'm not mistaken. And they really shut Calgary down when they played. They held them to, I think, about less than 20 points in the three battles of Alberta that they had. So, Edmonton's a good team. Like, they're just solid. They don't seem to screw up a lot on defense with penalties and blown coverages and whatnot. And offensively, they just kind of
they don't have the towel boy at offensive line.
Which is what Calgary might be down to.
I mean,
Dimitri Tsompas retired after the 2013 season. He was like their really good guard.
Yeah.
They're so drawn down for numbers on offensive line that he's like, hey, I'll come and be in practice and like hold tackling dummies or whatever.
Remember when that Adriano Belli came back after like a year off just because everybody was destroyed on the
Yeah, that's what but he's only doing it in practice. We're talking about practice.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, they have like Quinn Smith and Junior Turner, two of the D linemen, like playing offense. I mean, that's how banged up they are on the offensive line. I don't know how you can win. And there was actually like a quote from John Huffnagel in one of the Calgary papers. He says, well, we know he doesn't have a full understanding of the offense. And like someone's going to be like literally telling him how to line up. Like they're going to be on the line of scrimmage and the tackle's going to be nudging him. It's like,
that's your guy.
Block down on this play.
Oh, dear.
So I don't know how that's going to work for Calgary.
I hope the defense didn't hear.
It is kind of lining up for Edmonton.
So you're calling Edmonton to come out of
but
the
West. I think Calgary just keeps it close because they've got that playoff pedigree.
Oh, yeah. They've been around, right? They know what's going on. So I don't think anyone would be shocked if Calgary came out. But
probably not, no.
But, yeah, I think what you're saying.
And this is the first West final ever between two teams that won at least 14 games.
Wow.
Yeah, this was not really a great year for parity in the league.
Seriously, no.
I mean, three teams won at least 12.
Yeah, and then there was some poo around.
Yeah.
Look at the Jews, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I mean, they traded their best player to Calgary, Jerome Messam, as we probably should have mentioned.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the Stampeders, I mean, Charleston Hughes is back. He creates a lot of havoc up front. If he plays, I mean, Calgary's definitely got a shot at this.
Right.
But now we get to talk to the real game.
Moving east.
Yeah, going backwards. The game that comes on first on Sunday.
I'm on a flight back from Halifax to Ottawa this weekend during what will likely be the second half of that game. I can only hope for terror-related delays to my flight to allow me to see the second half.
Well, ISIS probably wants to watch the game.
Obviously, they do. As I said to you earlier, I'm not a big fan of the Islamic State.
But Islamic A&M.
Islamic A&M. Don't be stepping on my joke that I stole Islamic from some guy A&M? On Twitter.
That cow college?
You're only saying that because it was founded by a cow.
Yeah, so the Tiger Cats, the Red Blacks beat them twice in a row.
Can I stop you for 1 second?
Sure.
Rob was 100% certain the Argos were beating the Red Blacks. We're beating the Tie Cats and facing the Red Blacks. So it's always just fun to stop for a little second and enjoy when Rob's wrong. So we'll do that. Everybody enjoy it.
It was a 3-point game.
Nope. Everybody stop, enjoy it, smile for a second, pat yourself on the back.
Rob was hoisted by his own petard again.
Okay, now we can carry on.
Yeah.
Hope you all enjoyed that.
Cleanse the palate. Rub the hands. Let's go.
Yep. We got Tiger Cats, Red Blacks in Ottawa. Year two of the franchise. Certainly a pretty remarkable turnaround. At the same time, this feels like one of those letdown kind of situations, right? Where you've sat for 2 weeks, the new franchise, your fans are, and the more experienced guys maybe come in and beat you down a little. Now, you're not more experienced than a Henry Burris, right? Yeah, obviously. his name Campbell has been around with the Stamps for a while.
He's been with Edmonton.
Right, so he knows what he's doing. It's not a complete, obviously not a David Goliath thing. You're talking about the team that won the East. How do you see this one shaking out?
In my gut, I actually do think the Red Blacks get it done and win by 10 points. It will be tight. Wow. Hamilton's a proud team, obviously. 5-2 in playoff games under Kent Austin. But, I mean, at the same time, Hamilton's banged up. They had some little bit of luck to get by the Argos. You know, the Argos missed a field goal into the wind in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
There was a chintzy roughing the passer call that helped set up the winning field goal.
That was a terrible call.
And they've got some injuries, too. I mean, they lost Eric Norwood to a knee injury. He had 7 sacks during the season.
Right.
So, I mean, and they're already down about 5 defensive linemen now. So
they're going to have offensive linemen playing D on their team.
So yeah, they're going to have like some of
work
the
something
DBs
new with Calgary.
Lining up. Just stand out well wide and run around them. Like I know that Arnaud Gascon-Ledon is probably going to have
to draw
in at defensive end. So and obviously on offense, you know, Jeremiah Masoli's the quarterback.
Right.
Not a lot of experience. Scrambler makes plays, but the Red Blacks got to see him for 3 quarters, and that's, I mean,
oh, it's big.
They gave up 20 points against Masoli and the Ticats in the second quarter of that season finale, but once they had sort of gotten an idea of what to expect, they were able to contain him.
Right.
But it's still an interesting matchup. I mean, the one thing is that the Red Blacks special teams are a dumpster fire. Let's be honest. I mean, they're something like...
It's a hot mess for sure.
Not even a hot mess.
You've got it right
they're,
down to...
They're like last in the league in net punting. They're like second last in net kickoff average.
And that stuff... It's,
and Chris Milo can't do both jobs of place kicking and punting at the same time. No, he does one or the other well.
Right.
And so obviously Brandon Banks has like 4 punt return touchdowns this year. And Terrell Sinkfield's also, you know, gets in on the fun with returns. That was the only thing that kept that game close, the one down here a couple weeks ago where the Red Blacks won 44-28.
Right.
Sinkfield had like a punt return down to the 3-yard line. The Ticats scooped up one of their punts and ran it in. And Banks took a missed convert back for 2 points for the first time in the CFL history. So it's gonna be interesting. And the other factor too that hasn't been played up is that the Ticats have like more free agents than anyone else. So you wonder is like, is this gonna be a case of, well, next year's too late for this group, we better get something done, or is it a case of I don't want to get myself hurt before I go into free agency? See, I'll just let this guy pancake me. So it's an interesting matchup. But I think
not being talked about almost at all. Last I looked earlier this afternoon, it's supposed to snow and rain like hell on Sunday here.
That too. I mean, and who does that work in favor?
Well, I don't know, but it makes it interesting, right?
The Red Blacks might get Jeremiah Johnson back, and I think if they get into a snow or bad weather game, I mean, his running style, he's pretty gritty.
Yeah.
He might be able to be a factor.
I wonder.
But William Powell, I mean, he's one of those guys, he never seems to finish a run getting knocked backwards. He's always falling forwards.
I wonder if, you know, you're looking for who has the advantage in that sort of scenario. Burris, in his time in the CFL, has played in everything, right?
Yeah, he plays Saskatchewan, so he's obviously seen every weather.
Right. Even Calgary, you get some crazy wind and snow blowing in there. And on the road, right, that guy's seen it all. Doesn't mean he'll be great, but it means he won't be fazed by it.
No, certainly not. And Masoli's, I mean, this is going to be his second CFL start. He's a guy who played college ball in, you know, Oregon and Mississippi State.
They don't get a lot of snow in Mississippi.
Yeah, they don't get a lot in Oregon. Doesn't get snow.
A lot of rain.
They'll get rain, but not snow.
Who was it? Long, ridiculous, stupid sounding name. Who was playing quarterback for Winnipeg when it was in Toronto? Their starter got hurt. The Super Bowl, the Grey Cup was in Toronto. It was Winnipeg, Saskatchewan.
Maybe? Oh, yeah, I remember what you're talking about with the name.
Dunwoody or something weird like that.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Dinwiddie.
Dinwiddie, that's it. And he came out and had a pretty good game, right?
Like,
he
threw a pick six. But
yeah, okay, but you just wonder, right? It's the CFL's weird like that, where you have all these weird stories, things you would never see anywhere else, and you just wonder if the rookie quarterback comes in and gets it done, right? And all these things are just, you know, points of discussion. You have no idea how it's going to play out. The CFL, to me, is unbelievably unpredictable. Although
Random.
You have said all year Hamilton would be there even when...
Until he lost 2 quarterbacks.
Sure, but...
Kind of a big qualifier.
Right. But here they are. So... you know, getting it done against the Argos in the East semi, you know, the CFL's fun like that, right?
Well, one thing I want to segue back to is I'm sure there are people who, I mean, and I don't listen to every friggin' thing that's said on the radio internet.
Everything's important.
I'm sure there are people who've been like, well, they probably really didn't want to play the Argos. Now will there be a letdown because they're playing the Ticats?
It's a great impression of sports radio caller.
And I'm kind of like, you know what, from what I've seen and witnessed with Rick Campbell and his coaching staff, there's no way they would let the players fall victim.
So
like Rick Campbell's kind of like a Belichick light, like not the most colorful guy,
right?
But he's just like detail focused and just keeps everybody the same page.
This is a second year franchise. They don't care. They haven't built rivalries yet. I mean, yeah, naturally you would think Toronto, Montreal, they don't give a shit. Who's coming in? Okay, let's set up to beat them, right? There's no letdown. They wouldn't allow a letdown.
Yeah, and I'm sure no one said there. Said, well, we were 0-3 against Toronto because they would all probably think, well, we were going to get the next one. Two of the games were decided by less than a touchdown.
That was also robbing one out there. His theory that how hard is it to beat somebody 4 times in 1 year? The Argos weren't going to come in here and win. Now, turns out that doesn't matter. But there's something to that, right? And so I don't think there's any chance that the Red Blacks are going, oh, well, we really wanted the Argos, so we'll just let
I was going more on the theory that they were worried about having to play the Argos.
Yeah, okay. I don't think that's the case.
And they had beaten the Ticats twice. I think they were going to be ready no matter what.
Right. I think at this point, you're into November. It sounds like the weather's going to be, if not crazy, at least a factor. And it kind of seems to me like this might be one of those coin flip games, right? To me, anyway. Win it by three late. Somebody's got
the Red Blacks have won so many games in the second half this year.
It does look like
they're 7-2 at home.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true.
I mean, the crowd is going to be crazy for this.
Yeah.
This game was sold in a week in advance.
I can't even tell you how disappointed I am that I'm going to be sitting on, not even a WestJet flight where it's live TV and I can watch the game. I'm sitting on Air Canada fucking Jazz, which is almost doomed to smash into the ground before I get to see the end of the game. This might be the lost podcast if that's the case, but I can't tell you how bummed I am to, because I was a day one guy. When I moved up here, there was zero chance of me switching from the Leafs to the Sens, right? But my CFL,
you're a blank slate on CFL
Alliance, right? I was an Argos fan, but not a hardcore. I watched
the Argos win a Grey Cup in this apartment.
Yeah, and I'm not a diehard. And when I came up here, I kind of dug the vibe. Everybody was getting into it, and I jumped on the bandwagon. And it's not like I hate the Argonauts. This was going to be fun. And so I'm all in because as an Argo fan for a lot of years, I'm programmed to hate the Ticats anyway. But I'm really disappointed I'm going to miss this. And it will be, as you said, a hell of a vibe in that stadium, right?
It's been something. Like, to me, like, you know, we have the Senate. Ottawa has the Senators, but they play way out in Canada. Yeah. Not everyone can afford to go.
Right.
And it's a terrible atmosphere in that building.
Unless the Leafs are in town.
Unless or the Habs. Unless the Leafs are in Habs are here, it's just...
Yep.
It's just dead.
Yep.
And it's just the way it is. I mean, the crowd leaves halfway through the third period to beat the traffic.
It's true.
The vibe at TD Place for both the Red Blacks and Ottawa Fury FC, it's... Just giving something for people like, yeah, I would say 25 to 39, older crowd with the CFL because people who missed
They're
it.
Happy to have it back.
The people who like have gone to games with all three franchises. Oof. It's just like giving that, you know,
missing
sector,
the Gleiberman's
sector of the yeah. city, like something to rally around. And yeah. It's in the middle of the city.
Right.
It's open air.
Yeah. You're right there on Bank Street, right beside the water.
It's something completely
water.
Different. You're not out in Canadas and then stuck right. in traffic for a half hour right. after the game.
It's true.
It's much more representative of Ottawa, the big small town, than the Senators are.
So you're calling out for an Edmonton-Ottawa final.
I guess I am.
Yeah.
And what would be interesting is Ottawa's it was kind of funny. There was a great column in the Edmonton Sun on Wednesday by Terry Jones talking about when Edmonton had a big, long Grey Cup appearance drought in the 60s and early 70s, and they went in 73 and finally ended it. And that was the start of the run where they went nine right. times in 10 years.
City of Champions.
Yeah, that was the start of the City of Champions. They won six in 10 years, went nine times. And yeah. 73 was the start of it, and they lost to Ottawa
yeah,
in 73.
Everybody thinks that's an Oilers thing. Started before the Oilers started their
It started
run.
With the yeah. Eskimos yeah. in the five in a row that
Absolutely.
Transferred on to the Oilers.
Yep.
And it was interesting that first one in 73, they lost to Ottawa. And then amid that run, there was an eight. Ottawa's last Grey Cup appearance came in 1981 when they lost to Edmonton. So we kind of need to get Ottawa-Edmonton in the Grey Cup.
It'd be fun.
And I'm kind of like sitting there like, whew, man, that would be something to go.
Yeah.
Out there if they end up playing.
Oh, I agree with you, man. That would be crazy. We'll have to talk that over. Host one of these from the Grey Cup. But yeah, that'll probably wrap this one up for Tall Can Sports. We will we'll be back before the Grey Cup is on, and we'll certainly allow Nate to break it down for us again because... Mainly, we'll want to point and laugh if his predictions were incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be ready to break down that Calgary-Hamilton rematch.
That's Tall Can Sports for this week. Thanks, Nate.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at Tall Can Audio.